Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad. Today I have the pleasure of discussing innovation with Greg Geraci. He's an experienced product manager, author of the bestseller Take Charge Product Management book, as well as editor-in-chief of The ProdBoc, the Guide to the Product Management and Marketing Body of Knowledge, and a co-author of the annual study of Product Team Performance. He also teaches product management at DePaul University. For the last 7 years, he has served as the president of Actuation Consulting and advises many well-known organizations on product management and innovation practices. Greg, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure to be here, Chad. Thanks for the invitation.
Absolutely. So I'm always curious about how people kind of got their start in product management, and you have really deep experience there. But, you know, we come from different kind of backgrounds, a lot of us, right? So it might be customer service or training or development, you know, engineering, marketing. In your case, you were involved in sales before product management. How did that sales experience prepare you for a role in product management?
Yeah, great question, Chad. You know, I think from my perspective anyways, sales is a great entry point, although I agree with you that product management is an equal opportunity provider. People come into product management, as you indicated earlier, from almost any point on the compass. I think the benefits of coming from a sales perspective, though, are that basically sales is fundamentally about establishing trust, effective communication, thoughtfully leveraging resources, strategically thinking or planning, and above all else, probably executing. So I think all of these skills are needed by product managers, at least through my experience, and particularly since product management in the majority organizations is essentially influence-based. So I think the biggest difference between the two roles is really the time dilation. You know, when you work in a sales role, you have this sort of compelling sense of immediacy going from customer to customer, you know, sort of firsthand trying to close deals. Whereas in the product management world, there's less of that pressure in the short term on the immediate, and, you know, really a little bit more longer term thinking is required. So, you know, the time frames are much more stretched out for product managers to operate under. So I think it's a bit of an adjustment that has to take place to move away from thinking about individual customers to market needs. But there are many commonalities between the various functions that you can leverage as you go forward as a product manager.
Yeah, I like some of the ones you highlighted there, you know, the ability to build trust, communicate clearly, establish rapport, you know, with customers. I have, my background is primarily engineering kind of development roles, but I have helped sales, and I've actually been in sales roles before too. And I've observed I'm sure there's more than two, but let me paint broad strokes here. There's kind of two approaches people take to sales. One tends to be focused on making the sale. The other tends to be focused on providing value to the customer. Did you see that in your personal experience, and have you seen that in companies?
Yeah. I mean, well, I think the best sales organizations, at least from my experience, are really geared towards trying to solve customer problems. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, startup organizations, for example, sometimes, you know, have a tendency to view all dollars as good dollars, but as they scale, it becomes a bit of a problem because, perhaps the services or products that they've sold can sometimes not neatly fit, you know, what a customer needs. And, you know, down the road, that creates relationship issues, not only for the salesperson, but also for the organization with the customer. And, you know, I've seen that play out. And I think that's when sales organizations or sales individuals tend to try to sell what they have in their bag, right, even if the customer's need, you know, doesn't resonate with that. So I think the best sales organizations look at what are the underlying issues that a customer is experiencing, and how they can, with what's available, and not overselling it or, you know, too greatly changing the shape, if you will, of the solution beyond something that it can do, you know, try to sell into those needs and meet them. And I think that that type of emphasis on, you know, trying to really identify customer needs is one thing that I think also product managers benefit from the feedback from sales organizations that have that kind of mindset, because, you know, that can be valuable feedback coming back into the product team as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I find that that perspective of focusing on what is the customer's problem, how do we add value to them, is what makes that connection to product management, you know, really useful. And so it sounds like you put that experience in sales to good use as you moved into product management.
It was, it's been tremendously helpful. I will say that, you know, at least having, having had a sales experience does give you, if fleeting, some credibility with sales organizations, because they know that you understand their pain, because they know you've been there before. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, each individual salesperson sort of shapes their opinion based on, you know, how well you as a product manager, or you as a product or product management organization sort of communicate and give them the tools that they need to be successful. So it does give you some street cred with them, at least initially, but it's not something you can count on for the long term. It's really what you do.
Yeah, it provides that initial rapport, but you got to deliver too.
Ultimately, that's the key.
Very good. So I came to product management by first being a project manager, you know, in a software company. And I found the Project Management Institute, PMI, and their guide to the project management body of knowledge to be really helpful in improving my skills and get my hands around what project management really meant. And later, when I figured out we were actually doing more than managing software projects, we were really delivering products, and I needed to discover this bigger field called product management, I was kind of surprised there wasn't a similar guide, right? This place I could go to that said, you know, here's the guide to what you need to know for product managers. And you corrected that when you led the development of the guide to product management and marketing body of knowledge. How did that all come about? What's the background there?
Yeah, it's a great question, Chad. So first of all, I have a lot of respect for the PMI and the PMBOK. I think they're probably the benchmark that all organizations or professional association, professions aspire to in terms of their ability to be able to create some standardized language, processes, certifications, if you will, for the industry overall that, that some would argue, do a great job of moving the industry forward. Others would argue that maybe they're too constraining. I've heard both arguments before in the past. But to me, the value of having a document like the PRODBOK or a book like the PRODBOK is the ability to help at least lay the foundation for trying to build some commonality. I think you'd mentioned earlier that, you know, all product managers sort of learn through trial by fire today. And, you know, my original book, Take Charge Product Management, the first one I put out, was really geared towards helping people stepping into the role, in the first 1 to 3 years of their professional careers to basically not make the most common mistakes and to, you know, have a way to actually gain control of the product management process. If you talk to most product managers, they say, you know, our two greatest enemies are really time constraints. You know, we're being asked to do so many things by so many different parties, and also balancing conflicting priorities, you know, requests from customer service all the way to the board looking for information about market share or something. So, you know, to me, I think part of the problem is with everybody coming in, me from sales, you from project management, others from finance. I mean, it really is an equal opportunity profession. The problem that's associated with that is there isn't a common way of really communicating a common lexicon, common tools and practices that everybody, you know, gets to a common level of understanding around. And I think that's what led to the development of the PRODBOK. And, you know, there are obviously forces inside the profession, that aren't intentional, but that just exist because of, the natural, distribution of market share, if you will, in terms of training and education, things along those lines that sort of have become impediments to people rallying around common standards. And so the PRODBOK really was an effort, not just by myself and my co-editor, Stephen Eppinger, but also by 60 of the industry's thought leaders to try to actually come up with some common definitions, terminology, processes that can help people at all levels of the profession actually create a foundational cornerstone. It'll need to be evolutionary. It will need to evolve over time. But, you know, the way that it really started was my book, Take Charge Product Management, had gotten to number two on Amazon, and AIPMM had reached out to me. Well, I had actually reached out to them to see if they would help me market my book, at which point Therese Padilla at AIPMM had suggested the creation of a body of knowledge to help create those kind of standards, both in terms of lexicon, processes, and tools, and at least get the cornerstone laid, you know, for the profession that could be built on going forward.
Yeah, a few things you said there that I think provide a lot of credibility to the effort and the work that you've created in the ProdBoc is it's a collection of numerous insights from 60 different authors. So it's not just your perspective or another person's perspective. It's really an integration of what is the body of knowledge, you know, to point to for product managers. And also this integration with the professional association. So AIPMM, the Association of International Product Marketers and Managers, they're standing behind this also, right?
Yeah. Well, they were the sponsor, and they actually, you know, contributed the necessary resources to be able to produce the book. And then my job as editor in chief was to align not only my co-editor, you know, Stephen Eppinger from MIT, to lend academic credibility to the book to help increase its rate of adoption at academic institutions, but also, you know, through my the relationships I developed with a variety of industry thought leaders, for example, you know, Greg Cohen and Roman Pichler wrote the, you know, the agile sections of the ProdBoc. And so we sort of took a Steve Johnson, you know, contributed as well. Linda Gorshels. I mean, anybody in the industry would recognize, you know, the names of the people who contributed. I think one of the things that's a little bit nuanced about this BOC that's different than others, for example, you know, PMBOK or the BA BOC, I probably, is worth me pointing out that I've now contributed to four BOCs at this point, IEEE's IT BOC, the BA BOC, the newest edition that's coming out, the BizBOC for business architecture. So, you know, after having created the product management BOC, the various affiliate associations started to ask me to contribute as a product management expert to their bodies of knowledge as well. And the reason why I bring that up is I think what's a little bit different about the ProdBoc is there was an attempt made to not write this book solely from the perspective of product managers, even though it's geared towards product managers. The underlying philosophy was that product managers are sort of the point of the spear, but, you know, they can't be successful on their own. And it's their ability to be able to work with key constituents across different, disciplines or communities of practices that enable them to ultimately get their goals. So, for example, project managers, business analysts, you know, a range of other parties. So we worked with, thought leaders across a variety of different industries, such as the BA and the project management community, to actually get them to co-author sections about how the two professions should work together to optimize their working relationship and maximize the effectiveness of product managers. So it's a slightly different take than, you know, PMI or some of the other groups. Although, as we'll see as we go forward, there's more and more emphasis and the cross-industry perspective for organization, for industries and professions to start to try to pull the threads together and not treat everything solely as an isolated functional view of things, but also to try to come to some agreement about how these professions should integrate and, you know, for to create increased effectiveness across the various disciplines.
Yeah, each of these professions have a collection of tools, and those tools tend to cross over quite a bit between the professions. Right.
So that's right.
You know, as a product manager, I use a lot of project management tools and business analyst tools too. And the list goes on. So,
right.
So in that ProdBoc, what are the, you know, big collection of authors, then 60 people contributing to this, different topics, but what can you review the main topics that the ProdBoc kind of collects together?
Sure. There's really three primary sections in the ProdBoc. The first has to do with the history of product management. It's much older than I think people realize, spanning back about 70 years, believe it or not. Although, you know, it started off as brand management and ultimately evolved into its current state, product management. And there's that section also deals with standard terms that practitioners at all levels should know, as well as fundamental concepts. So that's the first section of the book. The second part of the book is really geared toward product management processes from the conception of a product to its ultimate retirement. So what are the inputs and outputs, just like PMI has done, you know, for those who are familiar with the PMBOK. And then ultimately, there's a third section with key product management tools that are geared towards helping practitioners actually apply some of the common tools that are required virtually by every product manager. And, you know, I think it's important to point out that, you know, even though there's an attempt to try to, you know, encapsulate a broad array of terms and concepts and processes and tools, I think it's important to point out to the listeners that, you know, bodies of knowledge are not meant to be prescriptive. In other words, you know, telling you what to do, but rather they're really geared towards being a reference manual that frames up commonly accepted practices and sort of provides a comprehensive list of options that you can choose from each step of the way as you move a product from creation to retirement. So I think it's important to keep in mind that it's a reference guide and it's not a how-to book. I mean, you have to apply some situational knowledge, you know, when you read these kind of books.
Sure. Yeah. And which is the same in the case of PMIs. You know, the PMBOK is a interesting collection of details on processes, inputs, outputs, and the tools used. And you need to look at other places to actually know how to do product management, but a really useful guide to get your hands around what the product management is.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, and I do recall the history section from the ProdBoc, and really enjoyed getting more familiar with, you know, what were the roots of product management and brand management, and how did that evolve over time.
I think it's not commonly, I think a lot of people don't realize how long the history really is. And, you know, it's really evolved into something separate and distinct and, you know, has tremendous value. I will tell you that, you know, when I work with the other associations on their box, they look to product management as, you know, a key North Star, if you will, because, you know, they recognize that product managers lead, you know, product teams and not project teams, but product teams, sometimes project teams. But, you know, and so they're looking for us to actually codify our own standards and practices so that they can actually, you know, dovetail more neatly with us. And, you know, I think that's been part of the problem is up until recently when this book came out about a year ago, you know, there wasn't really anything for them to actually tether to. And that was a significant problem. And I think that's also another reason why, from an academic adoption standpoint, that you don't see a lot of undergraduate training courses in product management. In fact, Jad, this will be an interesting bit of trivia for you. I think I am the only professor of product management to undergraduates in the entire United States. I've been saying it for about a year and a half now, and nobody has challenged me on that. The one thing that I have to point out about that is, you know, it's a dedicated course on product management, not as opposed to, you know, product management being mentioned or part of an undergrad, you know, a marketing course or something along those lines. So I think it points to sort of the need for both the BOC you know, also for the need for more academic training, to be quite honest, for I think people, you know, who are coming up through technical professions who want to understand how to work more effectively with product managers, you know, when they graduate.
Right. Yeah, I certainly agree with you. If any of my listeners email me and let me know of another undergraduate program, I will pass that on to you. But I suspect you're right. I've had the good pleasure of being able to teach product management, innovation management courses at three universities, but they're all graduate programs, right?
Yep.
And likewise, I have looked at the ProdBoc specifically as this is a good framework to build a course around And for any universities listening, we would be glad to help you figure that out, because I've been through that a few times, and I really do like using the ProdBoc as a reference material for learning these disciplines. So it's a good contribution. I'm curious, as you put the book together, one of the things I have ran into before is kind of heated debates around the semantics of what product management actually is. I've come into one camp, which is basically say product management is all about the product after it launches, and it's how we manage the product management lifecycle. And it's not about the fuzzy front end part, and it's not about the new product development process where we make the concept real. And then the other end of that perspective would be, which I think is what's represented in the ProdBoc, is product management is all of those things, the ideas to product in hands of customers.
Yes. So are you asking where I fall out on that spectrum?
Yeah. And just if you've encountered this before, if it came up as you were editing the ProdBoc.
Yeah. So my personal perspective on this is I fall into the latter camp. Shouldn't be a surprise. My belief is that product managers ultimately are responsible for nurturing and maintaining value. So creating and maintaining value for the products that they have responsibility for throughout their entire product lifecycle. Mm-hmm. To me, there's nobody else in the organization that actually has accountability for the product across the various phases. For example, if we take the example of project managers for a minute, if you were to look at PMI's definition of where a project starts and finishes, typically starts with a charter, and then it ends, either at launch or, some might argue, managing the launch process. But, there's a defined start and ending point. Mm-hmm. To me, what differentiates product managers from, in this instance, this example, project managers is, a product manager's job is never done. Whether it's the incubation or the various phases that a product moves through all the way till its retirement, they're the single person accountable for maintaining and optimizing the value of the product through all the various phases. I think the part of the reason why the second camp that you pointed to exists, at least from my perspective, is that there are very few people that are experts on every phase of product management. You might be particularly strong on the strategic aspects, so the conception through the planning, but you may not enjoy the nitty-gritty details of the development process. And conversely, there are people who love the downstream aspects of the job, whether it's the launching or the development, the nitty-gritty hands-on, development. Now, size of company, I think, has a role to play here as well. Sure. Startup companies, you've got to do it all. You're a jack of all trades. Mid-sized companies, you start to specialize, maybe strategic and tactical. Large organizations places an emphasis on completely different skills, being able to assess acquisitions, partnerships, things along those lines that may not be applicable, let's say, in the startup phase. So to me, I think part of the problem is that we tend to think of product managers as one brushstroke, one size fits all, but there's a lot of different skills that are required to span, the entire product management lifecycle. And I think that's part of the reason why you start to see, the lifecycle being carved up, particularly as companies scale, because there's a recognition that, maybe we'll have our product managers focus more on the conception through the development phase. And then, we'll turn it over to a product marketing manager to manage the launch and in market, maintenance of the product while channeling that feedback, back into the product managers further upstream. And there's innumerable variations on this theme, but, I think that's part of the challenge is, a product manager spanning the spectrum have to have a lot of skills. And it's more difficult the bigger the company gets to actually, span that spectrum, but it's not impossible to do. And I think, with appropriate training and education and, support, product managers can do an effective job of doing that. So I tend to fall in the second camp. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see all product managers responsible for the entire product lifecycle, working closely with counterparts such as product marketing or product owners or others to ensure that, there's effective execution at all phases throughout the lifecycle.
Yeah. Thanks for addressing that. I want to get your perspective on that. And I'm glad to have a place to point people to, you know, the ProdBlock that offers the, you know, the very wide bookends to describe product management in those terms of from taking the idea from the very beginning, where those come from, to, as you said, managing the retirement of the product at the end of its life. And it's not, I don't think, unlike what we find in project management, where PMI talks about what project managers do. But inside a specific company, you might have one person that does nothing but scope management, right? And they're not focused on the other aspects of project management, like procurement or HR or time and those things.
That's right.
So let's make this a little more applicable and talk about some specific practices. Is there an example of a company that's applied maybe the product practices or what you've done in putting together the steps in the Take Charge book that use that to change their approach to product development and management?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, as you know, we're a leading global product management and consulting and training organization. So we tend to practice what we preach, and we use the methods, tools, and techniques that are both outlined in Take Charge Product Management as sort of the core. And then we supplement with material from the product management and marketing body of knowledge, because it's just such a great reference, if you will, to help augment a lot of the work that we do. So, you know, the work that we do ranges with a wide variety of organizations. We're not solely dedicated to, you know, the enterprise software or SaaS environments. We work with companies like Johnson & Johnson in consumer products, to, you know, SaaS companies like Point Click Care. For those who are not familiar, they're the world-class solutions provider for the senior living community. You know, we work with telecom companies in the UK and India, like Labara, to the American Hospital Association, non-for-profit organization. So we cross a wide range of verticals, if you will. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from our standpoint, really, you know, as it relates to the tools, you know, we think that there's a tendency for organizations to not get the fundamentals right, and then try to, you know, focus on doing too many things, if you will, and not doing any of them particularly well. So, you know, whether it's, you know, we're often asked to look at, you know, and assess, you know, the product management team, you know, the processes that are in place and the tools. And, you know, our book, Take Charge Product Management, really gets at some of our core beliefs about, you know, what the core fundamental processes need to be. And, you know, one of the things that we think differentiates really successful product management organizations from those that are less effective are two things. One is results, and I think everybody would agree with that, but the other is being able to get to a point where they're proactive. And then finally, where there's strong alignment between the company's business goals and objectives and the actual practice of product management inside the organizations. So, you know, we've come to the opinion that there are really different profiles for product managers. If you think about a company's business goals and objectives, you know, if you were to hire, let's say, a really detail-oriented product manager and put them into a strategic role, they probably wouldn't do as well for the organization as if they'd hired somebody more strategic in that particular role. Vice versa, if you take a strategic product manager and you put them downstream, you know, really in the nitty gritty, they're not likely to be successful either, because they're not going to be happy with that kind of role. It's not the right thing. So, you know, we've developed a series of different personas and profiles for product managers that we apply, that we also align also back up to the overarching goal of the organization to help organizations manage the mix of their talent. Secondarily, from a process standpoint, you know, we believe essentially that all of the various product management processes need to be neatly aligned to the company's business goals and objectives. And, you know, in our annual survey of product team performance, 2 years back, we asked the question about, you know, how do organizations primarily align their product teams to the company's business goals and objectives? And it was sort of shocking. The feedback that came back from about 1,200 survey respondents was that product roadmaps were the primary way that the organization was relying on driving alignment between the company's business goals and objectives and the actual product team's activities. So they were bypassing a lot of the strategic elements of the job, whether it be, you know, product portfolio management or product strategy. And teams were so focused on execution that they were viewing roadmaps as the primary primary way that they were being connected back up to the company's business goals and objectives. So, you know, it's a little bit disconcerting to hear that, you know, that the focus is solely, you know, at least at that point in time, was predominantly on execution. And I don't think anybody would argue the importance of execution, but execution without context doesn't necessarily drive the best results. So, you know, part of what we do is we ensure that, you know, the various tools that should fall within a product management organization, ranging from product portfolio management all the way down to, you know, all the way down through product strategy into requirements management, roadmap development, and ultimately into measurement, whether that's through a product scorecard or through, you know, a P&L, you know, that all of those things are aligned, that there's consistent goals and objectives and metrics and criteria that enable organizations to have line of sight to how their product teams are performing based on the company's business goals and stated business goals and objectives in sort of an annual cycle. So that's part of it. And then, you know, I think the other aspect of this too is, you know, if, for example, you know, with all of the companies we do work with, whether we step in as interim heads of product management as they search for, you know, a permanent lead, or we come in to help them with specific projects, for example, you know, helping to resolve responsibility issues between, say, product marketing and product management, and, you know, putting in place a RACI level approach to trying to get, you know, some consensus within the key constituents on both those teams about where the spans of responsibility line up. You know, we do that kind of arbitration as well. But at the end of the day, you know, the tools that we use are the same tools that are outlined in the book, and we work very, very diligently in their application within organizations. So we try not to overcomplicate it. It's really about trying to get results, but you have to have the right people, and understanding the different types of product managers is critical to doing that. And then taking a close look at the processes and ensuring that, you know, they support the needs of the business goals and objectives. And whether it's J&J, where we step in as an interim head of product management for them, or, you know, other organizations like the American Hospital Association, where we do more limited work in specific areas in support of their goals and objectives, you know, it spans the spectrum, Chad.
Okay, so there's a lot there. So the key things were, you know, driving towards the results, having the right people doing the right work, having the proper processes in place, not overcomplicating it, and using the tools that are telling if you're aligned with the organization and getting towards the objectives or not, like a product scorecard. Is there, and I understand you might not want to use a specific company name, but is there an example that you can pull out that says, you know, we walked into this situation, and they were really struggling with this one thing that we happen to see a lot? I'm wondering if there's a thing you can point up, a situation you can point to help us understand. And this might be something that's kind of common in my listeners' environment too, and what to do about it.
Sure. So, I mean, regardless of engagements, there's typically two starting points each time. So, it goes down one of two paths. So, regardless of whether it's, you know, stepping in on an interim leadership standpoint or actually doing, you know, more targeted work inside of an organization, typically what organizations request of us is one of two things. You know, A, we're struggling with being able to have our product teams understand, you know, how to think more strategically about where we're going. So we're doing a lot of execution work, but we need help on the strategy side to be able to ensure that, you know, they're making good decisions efficiently, and in, you know, that will give us the best chance of achieving the organization's objectives and gaining buy-in from other executives in the organization to the plan so that they'll fully support it and that everybody signs up to it. So that's one starting point. The other tends to be where the rubber meets the road, down at the requirements level, and helping organizations create a series of objective criteria and objective ways of providing clarity to both stakeholders inside the organization around how product management is going to be making decisions, as well as informing customers about how, you know, where their incoming requests relate to others, you know, that already exist or maybe in inventory or in the backlog. So, you know, in the instance of, let's say, strategy, you know, in the case of, you know, a large consumer products company, we were brought in to basically play an interim, you know, head of product management role. And they wanted to really focus in on the strategy. They have tremendous relationships, the marketing of, you know, an organization of their scale and size, you know, gives them a whole range of assets that they can bring to bear. I mean, they can call, you know, Michelle Obama and try to see if, you know, something that they're working on aligns with one of her initiatives. I mean, they have that kind of horsepower. So, you know, at the end of the day, basically, you know, where they had problems is they hadn't had strong product management leadership, were having difficulty finding somebody to fill that role. And they needed to find a way to bridge the various functional leaders in the organization so that they would support a go forward plan over the next 1 to 3 years and build their resource plans around it. And so the work that we did was to basically initially anyways, was to go in, basically work with their leadership team, propose a template that would enable them to start to frame this up, you know, collaborate with them. And it took place over the course of 5 days where we all came together to a central location. We facilitated, you know, the session, basically got to a point where we had a rough draft, and then we worked it through the various levels of the organization, continuously refining it. And it took, you know, 30 days for them to have a coherent, well-documented product strategy that, you know, not only key stakeholders and customers could understand, but also that the product teams and the core team members, you know, supported as well in terms of its execution. On the other side of the equation, the other starting place, you know, for example, you know, with Point Click Care, you know, they wanted to actually have some type of criteria by which, you know, that the various aspects of the business would all be able to roll up into some type of portfolio management metrics so that they could make decisions about where to place their bets. They have tremendous skill set of being able to understand their markets, you know, their market share, where the TAM was, you know, and the SAM, and we're able to really, you know, hone in on those areas. But where, because they didn't have a head of product management at the time, they needed support was in being able to really try to translate that down into, okay, so what things are we going to do to capture more of the share? And then ultimately, what kind of return are we going to get based on those investments? And so we work with them to define organizational specific criteria, metrics, if you will, that enabled them to look across the expanded backlog, both by product area and then in aggregate, and then be able to figure out how to place the appropriate bets. So those tend to be the two places where most organizations want to start. You know, if an organization's got good momentum, you know, they may want to, you know, focus more on the strategy side if they don't have the right resources inside the organization. If an organization's struggling on execution, although that wasn't the case in the example that I gave you, they're leading their market segment by a wide margin. That, you know, they might want to focus more on, you know, the actual execution side and how that ties back up to the strategy and creating some type of product portfolio view. So those are two examples of they're the two most common examples of basically mm-hmm. how we get brought in and sort of the way that some of the work gets executed.
Good. Thanks for sharing those. I think there's huge value in recognizing that there should be alignment between what we're doing in our innovation and product development efforts and the business strategy, their goals and objectives. And sometimes we simply don't have a handle on what either one of those are, let alone how they're aligned. And starting there offers good value. Of all the roles inside an organization, I think product managers are acutely aware of this cross-functional nature, that there's all these different functions of product managers pulled on as we try to manage the stakeholders and meet their expectations. But I sometimes, at least I know I've done this, forget about any change we make is really a change management issue. And we're working inside the system And it sounds like you've had a lot of experience then, especially working at both that strategic and execution level, in recognizing that this is a change to the organization, and we need to manage that and get people's buy-in and get people moving in a aligned direction together.
Yeah, I think, you know, that you've hit it on the head, Chad. I mean, I think, you know, some organizations are so busy on the execution side that they focus on execution to the point where they really don't have a coherent direction. And I think the Great Recession did a lot to undermine a lot of organizations' focus on strategy overall. It exacerbated, you know, that problem. On the other side of the equation, you know, I think when you talk about alignment, I think this is something that a lot of organizations really struggle with, is ensuring that all of their resources, you know, both the people as well as the processes and the tools, all actually are working towards a common goal. And a lot of times organizations are either missing tools. We talked about sort of the lack of product portfolio management or product strategy and focusing on roadmaps, or the tools are misaligned and not actually working in a way that, you know, creates a sustainable system. And then, you know, ultimately, I think the other thing too is, I mean, very few organizations get to the point where they're actually proactive, where they put out, let's say, a product management calendar when the key events, you know, throughout the year are going to take place, so that their counterparts can align their schedules to support those kind of things. And so, you know, it's not just about results. It's also about optimizing the return to the organization and ensuring ultimately that the product management organization, which is one of the most important aspects of creating value, not the only, but, you know, leads that value creation process, actually, you know, is optimizing its returns to the organization, and doing so in a way that has respect for other parties inside the organization, and also is effectively communicating sort of their leadership, if you will, by putting together a calendar that helps everybody understand when critical events are going to take place. You know, these could be things like, you know, roadmap iteration sessions, you know, when customer advisory councils, you know, preparation for board meetings, things like that, that are repeatable generally within organizations and could be processized, if you will. So I think proactivity is something that's sorely lacking in a lot of product management organizations, and something that would go a long way. If you think about it, you know, CEOs are generally rewarded for being able to, you know, achieve the plans that they've set out, right? Maybe a 3 to 5 year financial plan. Mm-hmm. You know, the sales organization leadership is rewarded for executing their plan, right? I mean, there's this proactivity principle, predictability principle, maybe might be a better way to say it, where, you know, if people can understand, then, you know, you tend to be rewarded for your performance. And so I think we could take a page from, you know, senior executives and from sales leaders, and we should strive to be more proactive as a profession in terms of our execution.
It would probably relieve a lot of stress off of product managers also to have that plan in place.
Absolutely.
So your book, Take Charge Product Management, you mentioned that that is more of a step-by-step guide for product managers and contains the tools that you've used with these organizations. Is that the place you would, of the books that you've been a part of and the resources you've provided, is that the place you would recommend people start to find out more?
Yeah, I think both books have, you know, serve a different purpose, if you will. Take Charge is really geared toward those stepping into the product management profession for the first time, or those who have less than 5 years experience, although the book would benefit anyone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the goal really of that book is to make your life as a product manager easier and lead you down a path of taking control of your job and achieving proactivity, something that we were just talking about that few product managers get to, sadly, for a variety of reasons. On the other hand, I think the ProdBoc is really a useful reference book for practitioners at every level. Not something you're going to read from cover to cover, but it helps individuals standardize their language, make sure, you know, that you're not missing process steps in critical tasks. And, you know, at least if you are, you're doing it in a knowing fashion, because, you know, you're bypassing something because it isn't relevant. And it provides some guidance on how to work effectively with other product development team members and provides tools you can use. So I think at the end of the day, Chad, each of them have their place. It really depends on the needs of, you know, your listeners. I think Take Charge Product Management is an easy book to read, and it can get you, you know, get you humming quickly. And you know, a lot, it's written in a way that's very accessible, and I think deceptively so, because a lot of the tools that are outlined in that book are actually the ones that we use in very, you know, complex and sophisticated organizations. So don't be deceived by the approachability of the book. The tools have teeth.
Very good. And I assume the standard outlets for these books, you know, like Amazon.com, good place to go find these.
Yep. You'll find both books on the front page of Amazon.com for product management. And they're also available at best bookstores, you know, better bookstores everywhere.
Okay. Very good. And I always like to wrap up our discussions with a innovation quote. And if you could share a favorite of yours and why you chose that one.
I'm an Albert Einstein fan. I wish I was nearly as smart as that gentleman was, but he had a quote that always stuck with me that went along the lines of, we can't solve problems by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created them. And the reason I like that quote is, to me, it succinctly sums up the key challenges that I think we face as product managers and innovators. You know, if you think about problems, for example, like global warming, you know, we've created this problem, but the level of thinking that created that problem, it's going to require another level of thinking to solve that problem. So, you know, it requires looking at problems from completely new angles. And I think that's something that product managers, the best product managers, do well. And I think organizations often get caught up in the trap of living in their domain and not aggressively searching for ideas that exist outside the box, if you will, that could be applied in new ways to solve core business or customer problems. And we as consultants, you know, within my organization, see it all the time. And I think Einstein's quote at least reminds me that the answers are out there, but it requires investing time and energy thinking outside the box and outside of our domain to get them. And it also, to me, reinforces the role of strong product managers, not only making incremental improvements, which are often the most obvious, but also to search for disruptive or innovative solutions outside our standard frames of reference or domain. So it's always stuck with me. I paraphrase it a lot, but I think I quoted you exactly as Einstein had said it himself.
Very good. Innovation certainly involves new ways of thinking. For people that want to follow up with you, what's the best way to get in contact with you and anything else that you want to leave the audience with?
Sure. I'd love to hear from anybody in the audience. My name's Greg Geraci. The company is Actuation Consulting. That's www.actuationconsulting.com. Our phone number, if you want to reach out, is 312-775-2373. You can find me on email at Greg@actuationconsulting.com. And also, where I'm on Twitter, Greg Geraci. And you can reach me via LinkedIn as well, under Greg Geraci as well. So you should be able to get me any number of ways now.
Very good. And Amazon.com, easy place to find the books. Greg, I appreciate your time talking with us today and sharing your experiences in product management.
It's been a pleasure, Chad. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you. And I also want to thank the everyday innovators listening. The reason why I do these interviews is for you, trying to provide value to the work that you're doing, and appreciate all the work that everyday innovators do in pushing innovation forward. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training Your Customers Will Love You For. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.